This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace in Europe. And this one is about the EU Day, the 31st of March. It's a very important day, the day when the euro was completely introduced in the Republic of Montenegro. By then, even Montenegro was not even independent, but it has the wisdom to choose first the mark in 1999, the German mark, and then to transfer directly without any other consideration towards the euro. And this was finished by the 31st of March 2002. And then from that moment onwards, that country, which only gained independence in 2006 and then in 2017 became NATO member, had already the euro from the start. And is that not a wonderful role model for Ukraine, Georgia, Moldova, and for all the other pro-European countries? Absolutely. That's what I call since years the Montenegro model, the prior Euroization, unilateral, but with support, of course, and with consent of the European monetary authorities. But this is the much better model. And see how successful Montenegro is. It's of course also because of pro-Western orientation, because of NATO membership, because of the beautiful location, the great opportunities, but it's the euro which matters so much for tourism, for investment, for domestic development, for clarity, for no devaluations. Compared with the dinar and its terrible history of devaluations, hyperinflations, constant decline of value, and making the people who have to use it ever poorer. It's a tragedy. It's the oligarchization of countries when in constant devaluation cycles, most of the people get poor and stay poor. They live on a kind of quicksand of a weak currency. And the elite is living in great opportunities, manipulating the currency and living from the export results, which is not shared with the people, but only these export revenues are basically going to the few who control these assets, mostly because of some insider trading in high inflation, high deflation, often deflated currency, very difficult to have a reasonable understanding what a fair price is, because everything is constantly changing. And this is the reality of Yugoslavia since the beginning, but worst it started in 64 and then constantly going into crisis, especially after Tito's death in 80. And then constantly downhill with the biggest money printer of all, obviously that's Milosevic. Because he was not only a genocidal aggressor, but he was also a constant money aggressor. His war on all other republics by a fiscal war, basically, by printing the money as much as he needed, no limits, and financing his wars with that. He had, of course, the defense industry. He could pay this internal system quite well. But for the rest of the people and obviously all the republics who anyhow then left, it was an absolutely disaster. And I have already mentioned the hyperinflation with this 5 billion dinar sign. And even when in 94 there came the next new currency, the new dinar, it was again starting with 1-1 to the German mark. And it then later, like the Bosnian, it's always a good comparison. I made a small mistake or confusion the last time I talked about the Kosovo Euroization. Remember in 94, it was 1-1 to the mark, the Bosnian mark, the mark and the Serbian dinar. And now it's 60 dinars to the Bosnian mark and 120 dinars to the euro. That's the correct version. And the Macedonian dinar, just to give you a relation, is constantly pegged at 60 to the euro. So and that was also in the meantime, before 2008, the situation of the Serbian dinar. So even in the relative terms of 94, when the hyperinflation was, the first one was finished, then to this day, it was two major devaluation phases which the Serbian dinar has undergone. And it's quite logically that the people of Montenegro and also of Kosovo had enough of such a terrible currency. But of course, it was not only that the currency was bad, but also Montenegro has basically opted out of the currency system after the loss of the Kosovo War, the Serbian loss of the Kosovo War, and NATO defeating Serbia in that war. Kosovo, so Montenegro, wanted not to take part because it was the state union. There were some assets of the federal authorities and the federal army still in Montenegro. There was also some fighting in Montenegro. But in general, since the 97 confrontation between Bulatovic and Djukanovic, that's the two contenders, Bulatovic being the Milosevic ally, and Djukanovic then understanding already after more or less the disaster of the Bosnian War and under the, I think also he gradually understood that Milosevic is declining. He understood as well, and it was explained to him as well, I think, by the Western states and the Western powers that there is an alternative and they shouldn't commit for the next genocidal adventure or he will be taken responsibility and accountable as well. He understood that and he didn't take part. And he is today a serious European statesman who led his country into NATO. And he, I think so, will also lead his country into the European Union. And this cannot be said about Milosevic, the evil genocidal dictator who died in 2004 in Den Haag as a criminal. And there's the difference. And this was not so clear because Montenegrins have been still fighting, especially in the war for Dubrovnik. It was a lot of Montenegrinians who were fighting in that war in 91 and 92. That also has to be said. And there was a lot of prisoners from Croatia in Morin, in the prisoners of war camp. And a lot of atrocities were committed. That's also one of the truths. And also in the Bosnian War, Montenegro was part of that state union, which was, of course, on the side of the Bosnian Serbs. And a lot of Montenegrinians also have fought there. But, you know, gradually Montenegro has learned. And it's one of these examples where also improvement can happen. It's not automatically that countries stay on the evil side. Countries can decide their future and also improve, learn and adopt and join the free world. Montenegro, a great example for that. And it came all to a culmination and to a physical kind of expression after the lost war for Serbia and Montenegro. At that time, they were still united. They wanted to opt out of this currency union because continuing with the dinar was, of course, meaning that also Montenegrin taxpayers will have to pay for the costs of the war and also the control of the monetary system by Belgrade was a big, big issue also. And so the Montenegrinians were encouraged and were themselves also thinking in that direction. But I'm sure they were also encouraged to break away from Serbia monetary-wise. That happened in November 99. Remember June, victory moment in the Kosovo and Balkan Liberation War. And in November already the introduction of the mark as the only currency in Montenegro, and then the mark continued to be the currency until the 31st of March in 2002 for 3 years, it was the currency of Montenegro. And then when the euro was introduced in Germany and the EU countries, most of the EU countries, obviously the question was what to do. And logically, to have your own currency for a country which at that stage didn't exist, it was not seen as a decent move. So they could have only also done the Montenegro mark. But at that stage, also the international community was not ready to really recognize Montenegro as a fully independent country. So they simply did the necessary compromise and allowed the unilateral Euroization of Montenegro, same as it happened in Kosovo. And so these two countries, by this kind of complexity situation with the Yugoslav war and the Balkan Liberation War, they got the euro. And it was such a good decision. And really, it has paid off so well, because this investment security of the euro in Montenegro was the real key after independence for an unprecedented property boom, a tourism boom, which has lifted this country from relative poverty, and people really didn't know how to meet, to make ends meet and live really very badly, and didn't know how to survive the winter often. And they really catapulted themselves to property prices in the millions. And often you pay 6,000, 8,000 euro per square meter for the top level apartments. Similar like Vienna, the prices are in some of the coastal towns of still relatively underdeveloped Montenegro. I mean, that's quite amazing. And additionally, also the whole country has transformed with the euro as a firm fundament, obviously with NATO accession and with the major progress it made for EU accession. And that's quite an achievement. And that's additionally, always remember, the low taxation was also very good, and the Western orientation, foreign investment, focus on SMEs, digitalization and deregulation, and that was all done in Montenegro. It's of course, you know, there was also issues. Montenegro had a very rough period in the 90s, and obviously this period was complicated. Never forget, all these countries in the south of the Balkans have a history of being basically during the embargo years from 92 to 96, when there was the UN embargo. All these countries were the entry gate into Serbia. The smuggling, you call it, or bypassing, embargo breaking, was obviously one of the main businesses, mostly through Thessaloniki, going up to Macedonia on that border into Yugoslavia, or via Durres especially, because the Montenegrin harbors were also supervised. But Durres was, of course, chaotic. So in Durres, things came in. We're going then by truck up to Montenegro, later either by boat or by trucks further onwards into Serbia. That was the business model of most of the businessmen who are today very successful entrepreneurs and major in serious investors. But the principal accumulation of capital has happened with this embargo breaking in Montenegro, in Macedonia, in Albania. And that's more or less, you can trace most of the history of most of the companies back to that kind of chaotic period of they were in the transport business, it's now called. But obviously that was the beginning, and that was the geostrategic situation, and obviously that was the case. And only from 1999 then, with the mark and with the euro, with peace introduced by NATO in the Balkans, and also, absolutely, the decisive moment was the 5th of October with the fall of Milosevic. There was really the kick-off moment, and the turbo for Montenegro, obviously, was to have the euro. And that's something to be celebrated. I think on each 31st of March, Montenegro should do a huge festival to celebrate the euro, because unfortunately the Europeans have not been so generous to Georgia, Ukraine, Moldova, to Serbia, to Bosnia, to Macedonia, or to Albania, all the countries which urgently should do and repeat the Montenegro model of unilateral euroization, would be much better. Macedonia and Bosnia at least have the currency pegged. But it's my utter irritation, and I really don't understand why Serbia and Albania, Ukraine and Moldova and Georgia are not adopting the euro. I call for that already since 2017. But I'm seen then as a euro extremist. It's quite a funny thing. And I feel not guilty for it, actually. I wonder, actually, if some European officials who are paid to be European officials, and then, you know, for normally when you work in a company or an institution, you have to recommend the products of your institution to others. That's the normal sales activity. And, you know, I understand that we want to introduce the euro in Egypt, yeah, or in South Africa, clearly. But in the countries who are scheduled for joining, and in the countries which anyhow are totally dependent on European support and market access and are so close, wouldn't it make much more sense to have the euro already in Ukraine and Georgia? Because then we could have these very expensive devaluation circles we could have had avoided. Because all the countries, obviously, what they do when they cannot make a reform or they have a political impasse because Russia intervenes or they have a crisis or a war, the logical consequence is always to devalue the currency. And so all the prior investments of the EU is getting, of course, very difficult for them to repay the hard currency loans. Then we have to support them more. Additionally, it's also the prior physical investments are then also to be devalued, and all the business plan are completely confused. And so the situation is really not so good, I think. Yeah. So the Montenegro and Kosovo model, much better, and the results are much better. Montenegro is now per capita almost at the Bulgarian level and is three times richer than Ukraine and Moldova, and double the wealth level of Georgia and Kosovo. I think that's quite good. Obviously, and it's also richer than Serbia, and that's the most relevant comparison. And Serbia, obviously, has always been the much more richer country. It was Montenegro in Yugoslavia, had almost no serious investment. They had some industrial ruins, which was never very productive, like an aluminium combinat in a country with not even enough electricity for its own people. And they had two or three energy assets and one steel company of very dubious productivity. And yeah, the rest was subsistence farming and nothing, basically. So it is a total, it's very beautiful country, but there is not a lot of agricultural land. There is little mining. There is little energy opportunities. And there is some industrial ruins built from Yugoslavia. So it's basically tourism and it's this investment drive which made this prosperity possible and about nothing else. And then this would have been impossible without the euro, absolutely. The euro gave the investors confidence to park and to invest the money into Montenegro, and it is now richer than Serbia. Who would ever have thought that? Because Serbia, obviously, the flat plains around in the north, Vojvodina and Belgrade, and that's the industrial heartland and the agricultural heartland of Serbia. That's the real rich areas. And also the southern industrial belt around Kragujevac and these places where the real most of the defense and the automotive industry of Serbia is based. This is normally the rich part of the Balkans, but it has turned out differently because of good policy in Montenegro, bad policy in Serbia. So the 31st of March is absolutely celebration day for Montenegro and a role model for everybody else. Obviously, you know, the Europeans are always so afraid that then these countries with bad macroeconomic policy conditions could join the euro. And actually, it's not joining because I'm not talking about joining the eurozone. It's a unilateral usage of the euro. But when you see that each single of the countries, even Ukraine, which is at war and has an expensive defense budget, has a much better fiscal position as, for example, Greece, which now is at 200 GDP debt, and Italy is at 160. And normally we should be only at 60 according to the Maastricht criteria. And every single country, with a little bit of exemption, we will see now, Montenegro is at 70%, Ukraine as well. But we are, all of them are definitely much better than Greece and Italy and Belgium. and many others in the Eurozone. So, and overall, all these GDPs of all the nine countries I'm talking, or the seven countries which have not euroized up to now and should, is very small. It's about $240 billion, which is the whole GDP of all nine countries together. So that's about half of Austria, about, or maybe 60% of Austria. So we are in that kind of task. But unfortunately, our elite is not really believing in enlargement anymore. They are focused on their own daily management, which is okay for some minor elites and some people in Brussels and the Commission to focus only on the task. But we should have at least some wisdom and some generosity and some kind of understanding that Europe is bigger than just the EU27. And especially now we lost the country, it like the UK, it should be a big wake-up call to be more open and to be more inclusive and to allow, of course, first Montenegro, North Macedonia, Albania, first to euroize and then to join, and the NATO members first, and then also the other six first to euroize and then to join NATO and then the EU, exactly as Montenegro has done it. And I cannot understand why we are waiting. And that's anyhow, I hope, the Biden doctrine, because we need American leadership for that. Anyhow, so the euro was a major success. Obviously, it brought down the interest rates. It brought down also the whole inflation and the risk of devaluation. And it has also clearly been very beneficial for the tourism industry, for the financial market stability, for the transparency and accountability of the financial market in Montenegro, and so on and so on. So Montenegro is today already implementing the fifth anti-money laundering directive of the EU, and so on and so on. This is all going ahead because then obviously EU accession is accelerated and the whole regulatory alignment. So let me think what could speak against the euro anywhere. I don't know. And I was thinking now for years about it. Actually, when I worked in Kosovo, it was so normal that I only, when I came to Ukraine, because also Macedonian is packed, and also Bulgaria, and also it was Bosnia. And just in Albania, it was annoying to have the leg. But then in Ukraine, I saw the misery of so many people when I was at these consultation rounds with the stakeholders. And it was always like this, you know, first you do your discussions and your presentations, and then it's questions of the audience. And each and every time I had these events, it was always the question like this, yeah. I have invested in this business. I had money at the bank. I was quite successful. Then came the devaluation, the banking crisis, the inflation, and I lost everything. What can I do? And what you tell as European expert then to the SMEs of a country where they had faced such terrible kind of currency manipulation, high inflation, hyperinflation, devaluation, and everything was breaking down, and all their entrepreneurial success and their savings have evaporated with bad currency policy. I mean, what do you tell them? Yeah, my answer is I tell them the Montenegro model, and I say that this is much better. And if there would have been wisdom in 2015 or in Ukraine or in 2004 in Georgia, and they would have, or in 2011 in Moldova, in 2012 in Moldova, in 2018 in Moldova, or today, they would have done the euroization already. But unfortunately, as we are in Europe, always in the Napoleonic statement about the Austrian-Hungarian monarchy, in that one we are quite similar, always too slow, always too late, and always fighting the last crisis. Napoleon talked about battles, but it's what we do basically. But we have the instruments, we have the tools, we have all these wonderful, successful mechanisms, but unfortunately we don't have the unity, we don't have the courage, and we don't have the political will. And I think we have to really call President Biden again. Please help us. Please help Europe to be more united, and please help Europe to unite by the euro. And if the Frankfurt Central Bank or the Brussels authorities really have no understanding, please ask the Federal Reserve to bring the euros for the euroization. and we will celebrate one Euroization of the other. And that will be the accelerator towards EU membership and NATO membership, as it was in Montenegro, as it was in Kosovo. And by the way, the euro from the start was a political project. There were a lot of economists, a lot of things, and clever people worried about the euro and, you know, too early, too late, you know, not complete enough, not enough fiscal authority behind it, not enough fiscal unification we have to do first. It was always a union, a political tool of political unification first, and the currency as a tool for unification from the start, from Maastricht onwards, from the Werner Plan onwards, from Helmut Kohl's leadership for a united Europe by the euro. And the same is true today. The same is true today. We need the euro as the kind of forward tool, because political unification is, of course, always a bit of an issue. But the euro makes sure that we can speed up at least the monetary unification, and we can avoid then to have the problem like we have it now with Hungary and with Poland and Czech Republic, where they make fun of our instruments and do their kind of funny monetary politics and steal from the people, especially the Hungarians, by currency manipulation, and we can do so little about it. So also a sign for that they shouldn't never to be repeated. So with the Hungarians, we are now stuck until Orban is there. But the situation is all the others who want to join, first to the euro, and then we talk about membership. Because then to have this kind of scenario of Hungary, it's outrageous. It's outrageous that we cannot do anymore. So first the euro, much better for the people. And so we cannot be blackmailed by the political elites later saying, oh, I don't like the euro, it has not been so good or something. So, and that is what I call for. And that's what is the Montenegro model. And please, anywhere where you are, it's the best way to have a good, stable currency. If you're listening in other parts of the world, it's possible better to have the peg to the dollar in Asia or in America. But anywhere else, it's very good to back to the euro. The euro is also the lead currency in Africa, with over 15 countries backing their currency to the euro. And it is absolutely the one big currency in Europe. We shouldn't have 26 currencies. It's enough to have one currency in the European Union as well. And all in all, I think in Europe we can do with 5-6 currency, not with 26. That's absolutely wrong to have so many currencies. The Montenegro model is the day to celebrate every 31st of March. And congratulations, Montenegro. And please join very fast. In 2024, we have the European Parliament elections. And I want to see Montenegrin parliamentarians in Brussels at that election. And you have it well deserved. You are ready for that. And please always work very closely with the Americans to identify the blockers, the rejectors, the ones who want to stop you in Paris mainly. And that one has to be tackled by the Americans, obviously. But everybody else, I think, will be welcoming and celebrating one more country to join. And please best to take Albania and North Macedonia along. And that's the way for European unity, if we have courage, and we should have that. And now with Biden, I think the times will be much better, and I'm optimistic that we will be 30 countries in 2024, and that will be amazing. Celebrate Montenegro and visit it after Corona. It's a wonderful country, and you will enjoy. Thanks a lot for listening.